thanks to the Huffmans, we had a good problem last week where Father had to run to the tabernacle to get more communion wafers. So I'm hopeful that that'll be a kind of problem we're going to continue to have in the future. And I didn't get to attend the workshop that we had a couple of weeks ago because I was staying at home trying to make sure I didn't infect you all with COVID. But I do think a lot about the future of the parish. And when I do, what I start to do more often is I reflect a lot about where we came from and how we got here. Does anybody remember a movie called The Breakfast Club? Anybody seen it?
Oh, yeah.
A bunch of high school students serving a Saturday detention for various rule infractions. They're told to write an essay where they're supposed to describe who they think they are. The scene kind of plays out in my head a lot when we talk about the future of St. James, that we're tasked with writing an essay describing who we think we are. Well, challenge accepted. I'll write the essay from my perspective, and since I'm up here, you all get to hear it. Every year, usually after Thanksgiving dinner or the next day, we kick off the Christmas season in our house with the ritual of getting out the decorations, and when we've got everything all put up and done, then we settle into the couch and watch some classic Christmas movies. One of the first ones we usually watch each year is The Polar Express. I enjoy the way that movie kind of combines some abstract and dreamy concepts with other very detailed, stunning visuals in it. It's just the artisticness of it is just kind of amazing to me. Meticulously down to every little detail, like each train or each rivet on the train and things like that. And it's not a religious movie. It's not a story really about the real meaning of Christmas so much. It's more of a Christmas season story. But there is a strong theme of faith at the core of the story. And it's implied that the important matter is to believe in Santa Claus, but that seems to oversimplify it a little bit. The hero boy, who's never really named in the story, is struggling. He's growing up, he's getting older, and he's becoming a little cynical and losing his innocence and his ability to believe. And he's looking for evidence that Santa Claus exists, but more often he's running into something that makes him doubt it. I think there are parallels that go pretty well beyond Santa Claus there. When Paul talks about the wisdom of age versus the wisdom of God, I think we're talking about the same thing. Going on a quest to prove God's existence or non-existence is somewhat of a fool's errand, trying to acquire wisdom of our age. The boy in the Polar Express is trying to acquire the wisdom of his age, but ultimately he moves on from that and chooses just to believe. And ultimately we make a choice to accept or reject God. Accepting God is an act of faith and an acknowledgement that the only real wisdom lies in pondering God's will. And it's an admission that we can't really acquire true wisdom without God. The wisdom of God has to be at the center of our quest. And that is an act of faith to do so. All people worship something. But the question is, are we worshiping the Creator or the creation? Looking to earthly creations for answers will only bring suffering. At the end of the movie, the train conductor and the hero boy say their goodbyes, and the last thing that the conductor says to him is, he says, the thing about trains is it doesn't matter where they're going. What matters is deciding to get on. Which brings me back to why I think so much about where we came from. Prior to 2005 and the closure of St. James, Kim and I were Sunday school teachers. I wasn't Catholic. So when I attended Mass, I didn't participate in communion. And when I heard about the potential for closure, I was astounded. I had grown up in churches that were doing well, but maybe not as well as they were doing before. And each of them asked many of the same questions from me. They wanted the perspective of a teenager or somebody younger to answer some of these questions. Like, how do we get people your age to not leave the church? How do we get them to come back when they do leave? And how do we get new people to come? Now, I may not have been a true member of St. James at the time, but out of all the churches I'd ever attended in my life, it was the only one that I was regularly attending where people weren't asking those questions. So I decided to voice my frustrations, and I wrote letters to the diocese, and I wrote to several area newspapers. Sometimes my letters even got printed. If I ever got any responses, they were almost always from people who didn't seem to understand where I was coming from. they express sympathy for how painful this must be for me, or either explicitly or implicitly said something to the effect that, hey, this is happening and you need to get over it. And this is where I got a little combative. First of all, I had only known St. James for a few years. I think the closure of the church itself was probably more painful for people who had been lifetimers than it was for me. I had some relationships with other members outside of Kim's family, but I firmly believed I really could go to church wherever I want to, and I'll be just fine. What my letters were about is how hard it is to keep a strong church community going. And when you have one, you don't give it up. I'd seen enough other parishes fighting for a future to know that you don't sacrifice one when you have it. I don't need to get over it. You need to get over it. You're going to find out what an incredible mistake is being made, and you won't be able to undo it once you do it. I'm just telling you now before anything gets finalized. So in the midst of all of this, I was becoming an advocate, maybe a little bit of a troublemaker even, but I still considered myself somewhat of an outsider. It was what happened next that really changed things. When we started to maintain the around-the-clock prayer vigil in the old St. James building, I knew that St. James wasn't just a parish where people go to meet their weekly obligation. It was a community. I didn't know where this train was going, but I decided to get on. I don't think any of us knew that we'd end up here where we are today when we did that. When the church was closed, the vigil continued. When we no longer could have Mass there, we had Sunday prayer services. When our vigil got shut down, we had Sunday prayer services at the United Methodist Church instead. And we met with clergy from the Polish National Catholic Church, among others. We were offered services by some other clergy. We were patient. As we considered what it would mean to take on a new identity, the church community, that is, seemed to be steadfast in one area. People were adamant that we didn't want to get into another situation where we would be beholden to a bunch of man-made rules with little basis in Scripture. Such things were viewed more as tactics meant to control us than to allow us to live our faith and discern God's will for us and for our church community. While I don't discount the need for structure in a faith community like ours, the rules need to guide us toward the Creator, God, not the creation, the governing body of the church. And that brings us to today. When I think about where we are and where we're going, I think about the need for a church community on a journey together, seeking the wisdom of God, not just for ourselves, but also to find out what we're supposed to do with it, how we're supposed to use it to enrich the larger community around us. It's not complicated, but it is hard. It's love one another. Okay. How? How do we do that? What do we do? Last year, when Kim's grandmother, Ann's mother, passed away, we had a moment after visitation where family took turns standing up and sharing stories about her. Now, I knew a lot about her. I'd known her for a long time, but I learned a lot of things that I didn't know, too. And I think everybody in the room might have learned something that they didn't know. We all lead complicated lives and interact with many different people, and none of us knows everything about all of it. But one of the nicest things that I learned was about Joanne's habit of taking communion to people who couldn't get to church. I knew that she did that, but what I didn't know was that she didn't tell people she was taking them communion. She said, "I'm taking Jesus to them." Now that is love, and God is love, and Jesus is love. And taking Jesus to someone is an act of love. What are the ways that we can take Jesus to our community? Communion is just one of the ways. What are some of the other ways we can? When something is happening in this community that really gets us out of sorts, we may be tempted to get angry or assign blame. And anger can be useful. It was a great motivator for me when I wrote letters to the editor years ago, spent my time covering the prayer vigil in church. But the message in my letters wasn't angry, and our vigil was not an act of anger. It was our attempt to bring Jesus to our community and bear witness to God's love. And that's who we are here to meet. And if it touches one more heart in our community that would otherwise not be touched, then we can't ever stop being who we are. St. James.